A very good morning to you. Welcome to the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Let me start by apologizing for the late start to today's program. We had a recorded program that started a little later than its scheduled time, and therefore we had to start this program at this time, which is now 8 minutes after 10 o'clock. We thank you for your patience and your understanding. John Stout is our technical operator producer for today's program. We go until 2 o'clock, and Dennis Johnson, I'm your host. You can reach us at 43-41-790. You can send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862. That's 266-IVOB. You can send an email to brasstacks, that's one word, brasstacks, at starcomnetwork.net. 2019, a year of tragedy, and January 2020 has started with its fair share of tragedies. Gun violence claiming the lives of our young men. We've had house fires and traffic accidents. We've had tragedies of another sort, and if you include the trial in the United States of a former government minister, you can add that to the list of things that we would rather not have had affecting our nation. So it was perhaps all these other tragedies that pushed what I thought was also a tragedy onto page 9 of the Weekend Nation, Friday, January 17th. On page 9, there was a story that said, if you don't want to call it an iconic business, call it a landmark in Bridgetown that apparently will be no more. And that's Brancas on Fontebelle, another black business that is seemingly being removed from our landscape. Raul Branca, in addition to being a cricketer, was a part of several enterprises, Harriet Enterprises, Maps Garment Factory, El Hombre's Men's Fashion, Barbados Lumber Company. That's according to the story. Brancas on Fontebelle, when the family home was being constructed, it was one of the places we went to for items for the home. We have done in-store broadcasts from Brancas on Fontebelle, and sitting here in the VOB studio as the operator for, strangely enough, the program that just ended, the BARP half an hour at Peter Boyce. Both here and when we operated from Fontebelle, Peter would sometimes tell me, call Raul, and we would call Mr. Branca, and he would exchange with us during the course of the BARP half an hour. I recall when he lost his daughter, the pain in his voice. She was very much a part of the business and his life. So this must be a further blow for him. So while we talk about taking down the NIS building and the fire station and the various other closures and the other tragedies that we have faced in 2019 and 2020, I add to my list the loss of another indigenous business, if indeed we do lose Brancas on Fontebelle. It is a sad day for business, a sad day in the life of the family, and I hope that the pioneering spirit of the father finds expression somewhere in the future of the children. It would be a sad day if that name is removed from the business landscape of Barbados. We've lost too many of our businesses in the recent past, either through acquisitions or mergers, and I wait to see what the next level of Bajan enterprise will be, in what areas, and which names will become iconic in the future, long after I'm gone. But there's another name that we can perhaps say we will see no more. That's my feeling this morning. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Blessed morning to you, Mr. Johnson.
To you too, ma'am.
So, Brancas being removed by government?
No. What made you think so?
You know, the other buildings further, the UAM building and thing, that was acquired. So I was wondering if Bankers was also acquired.
No, it just says it was closed for the final 10. That's all the item in the newspaper said. I only mentioned the others because we were talking about losing landmarks, because that's what I call a fire station and the NIS building. I call it a landmark.
Mm-hmm.
And why did I call it a tragedy? Because I think it is unfortunate when black businesses close. Mm-hmm. I think when a family invests its... when a father invests his time, his energy, his finances into creating a business, he incorporates his children into it, and it's his source of income, and it helps to develop the housing stock of Barbadians by providing them with sustenance, and the business goes under. I think it's tragic. If people don't agree with me, well, you know, that's part of life. I think it's tragic.
You know, sometimes businesses, the grandchildren take on everything, but...
Yeah, and the children go off in different areas, like Leo Leacock and company, his sons went off into something else and started insurance company.
Maybe it could become a landmark in technology.
Which is why I said I wait to see what they may set up. The challenge for me, though, ma'am, is this. I find... We do not understand, in general, what I think is important. That's somebody's name and what they do with their lives, okay? We pay lip service to people like Emile Straker, who used his talent as a musician to create the Merry Men. And along with his colleagues, they established a name for themselves. His son Dean and Alan Shepard and Foster and the guys started a name for themselves and created a business known as Spice and Company. We don't pay attention to the creative talents of people like Nicholas Branker. And there's some that we select and hold them up, and then there are others we say, what was a big thing?
So he's also connected to the Branker, Nicholas?
No, not as far as I know any of.
Oh, okay. All right, I just touched on that, but I called to ask to see if what can happen here. Okay, yesterday the program was about the architectural builders and things in Barbados.
Builders and artisans.
Yeah, artisans, right? And I was asking myself, because I heard one of the guests say that the polytechnic is there for the young people and so on. I know for a fact that the polytechnic is really difficult to get into now because there are children from the higher end schools, community college and everything, that are heading toward the polytechnic and in droves. And those who the polytechnic was actually, you know, catering to at first can't get in. All right? So I'm saying up to now, we know that we have children who do the exam, and we know the level they are. Some of them are get pretty low marks and everything, and they're judged by that, which they shouldn't be. So what are we going to put in place for the children that we know that I say we, because all of us are in this country and belong here, that we know even because they are 15, 16, and when they leave school, they still can't read. And I always
why is
remember,
that?
Listen, I always remember...
Ma'am, why
I can't
is
remember
that?
If it was Dr. Yolanda or the lady went to the prison, and she said the majority of guys...
Yolanda Ford.
Right, cannot read and write. So what are we going to put in place to help these children? What are they really doing? Because every year we get turning over 3,000 plus children coming from school, and then when they go on the block, there's a problem. There will be a problem, and there will be a continuous problem if it continues like this. So one of the guys was saying that Ali's trying to find out the children's strengths and so on for at least around 12 years old and gear them towards the same working with the hands.
You know, I try at least on two occasions to ask you a question and you ignore me completely, right?
Yeah.
I can try for the third. Hold on. I can try for the third time.
You are in control,
Ma'am, I am not in control of anything. The program is being controlled by a gentleman up there in another room called John Stout, who has the controls of my volume. He could take it down anytime he feels like it.
No, very nice young question, man, by the way.
Oh, yeah, of course. Everybody here is, with the exception of the person you're talking to. Let me say this to you. Why would I wait until the age of 12 to determine that the child in my house cannot read or write? Because if we wait until the age of 12 to determine that, we have failed that child for about 10 years. Because from age 2, 3, children begin to become aware of what's around them. They either start picking up things, putting things together, pulling apart things, tearing down things. But we don't pay attention to what they're doing. If you give a child a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil, and they do not sit down and start scrawling. Sometimes they scroll up the wall and we just scream and shout at them. But that's part of their development. They're learning how to hold things and how to make symbols and signs. So I find it strange that we would only figure out by age 12 that a child can't read and write. I find it odd. Very, very odd.
That hit me when he said so yesterday, right? But he was saying not to wait until they're finished school to be scrambling just to find to see what it can do for the children. But as you were saying, yes, it's better to start much earlier. So the educational system need to get into that. Also, parents, I know the parents is number one, but also the education system need to be geared to finding the children's strength and so on. Otherwise, this day will go on and on and on.
How do you get it done? How do you get it geared to the children?
Mr. Johnson, remember, right? Some people do not see the importance of education. They have to be educated to, in order to push education.
Good.
So if
we have parents who are not, who do not understand what education is, if we have teachers who don't understand what education is,
I would not put teachers in that category at all.
Why?
Right?
Why? Why?
Teachers are teachers.
And plumbers are plumbers and carpenters are carpenters.
Right.
What's the point?
Some parents do not understand. You know that.
Hold on a second. So we don't have teachers who are parents?
They'll check out for their own.
What? So, Ma'am, come on. You know, I am sitting here and I'm absolutely flabbergasted. You're telling me that a teacher will look out for their child because they are a parent or because they're not a teacher. Which one? Because I'm asking you why you're not putting teachers in the same category.
I'm not putting teachers in the same category.
But why?
That is their job and they know that they're going to school to teach. And the parents should
Why do you assume that?
The parents should back the teachers, Mr. Johnson. The parents should go to the school. They should try, if they can't get the PTA, they should try as much as possible to know what's going on. It got to stop, Mr. Johnson. It got to stop. I'm not speaking to you. I'm speaking to parents out there. I came in an area where a lot of our parents didn't understand the importance of education. But as I raised my
children... Really?
Yeah.
So how come they got their children educated? Why did they tell them, go and learn something so that you'll make something of yourself?
As much as there were people out there who pushed for education and walked barefoot to send their children to high school and other school, there were some that as soon as the child get to age to work, go and work because the family, you know the system, this family
Ma'am, here's what you're not getting. I don't know why you're not getting it. Every single family that you're talking about said to their children, John is the bright boy. We will push him into school. You ain't as bright as John, so you go across there and work. You but come too late, so I don't. Ma'am, that's not because they don't understand education. They understand, but they knew their circumstances did not allow them to put everybody through the process because they had to pay for it. It's not that they didn't know. They knew. That's why they selected the person that they thought was brightest and said, and I'm using the term brightest as they use it, right? That's the one we're going to send to better himself in England or to better himself in school or to better. And you, well, you know, you're going to have to learn to cut grass with your father. You're going to have to walk behind me and learn how to fix up the kitchen. Ma'am, that doesn't mean they don't understand education. It means they understood, but they couldn't afford. So they made sure everybody had an opportunity to do something and not be called worthless.
Well, things have really deteriorated since then.
No, you know what has deteriorated, ma'am? We have sat down and said, somebody got to do it. That's what has deteriorated. We've sat down and decided somebody else gonna make that decision for us. So 11 plus can tell us which child will get ahead and which child will not. And somebody will come along and fix the system. We have lost the responsibility that our parents, who supposedly were less educated than us, used to take. And saying, look, this is how this family will survive. You will do this, you will do that, you will do the other. You will hold on for a bit, you will do that, you will do that, you will do that. That's called organizing your family. Now, you may not like it, right? But the mother would stay home and say, look, I can teach you how to sew. I can teach you how to do this. And you may even have sons who say, you know what? I want to be a tailor, so show me how to hem. But no, that's for the girls. You got to go and cut grass. The fella may not want to cut grass, but that's what he was told to do. And because that was the structure of the family, he did it until he didn't want to do it anymore. And then he went off on his own. Ma'am, our problem is that we wanted somebody else to fix it for us. That's what it is.
I'm glad we're talking about this now because something has to be done with the children from early.
Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Thank you, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
How are you today, Mr. Johnson?
I am all right.
Okay, I've got a concern. Mm-hmm. My concern is the minibus stand. Is that out there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're not venture out there to take a minibus after, say, about 8 o'clock. There are none out there in the van. Just ones that are one minibus and greens. In their sight, no sight of no human. Otherwise, the workers, nobody. PVS workers, nobody. And the guy was telling me, you got to go down by the back of the train mall to get a van. Out there, it's creepy, lonesome. You know, like walking through a graveyard at night and somebody touch you on your shoulder, you will run. I am serious. It needs light. It needs, I don't know, everything. Police presence out there is horrible. It is horrible. And when you think back about the young lady that got killed outside of Juliana years ago, and you walking and cross that bridge, you know what I mean? When they left the bridge, when they leave the I'm not coming back out by Radio Fusion, coming back to get something to go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like your back of your head just get tight, like stress.
Because of the fear you have.
Right, and you know, you heard for part about it. I'm visually impaired, and I was walking with some person.
That entire system of public transport, I've often said that I think it's unfair for our citizens to have to go from one stand to another stand to another stand to try to find transportation home because it is a citizen of Barbados. So when you have to go from transport board to ZR to minibus because one is not available, and as you say, walking the distance is unsafe, I think it's unfortunate. I really do. And in this whole plan to redevelop Bridgetown and the areas out there, I hope we pay attention to things like lighting, drainage, shelter, and the safety of those who travel the roads of Barbados. I just find our transportation system is chaotic. at the best.
So why can't they not use the old temporary, the old market, Future Street Market? Why can't they put all the vehicles together in one line? Transfer boards, ZR, minibus, whatever.
Yeah.
And it will be much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Because me tell you, when you get going across, I was frightened internally. And if somebody touched me, I would probably melt.
You would fall.
I am serious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I got to a point that when I was coming back across, I folded up my cane instead of tap, tap, tap. I folded up my cane and I walked back across, just falling onto the person that I was walking with. It was very frightening.
And you do this regularly?
No, that's the first time I did it for a very long time.
So then it would be twice as frightening, yeah?
Yeah. Exactly. And then Bridgetown, too, when you come through town, it's like a ghost town. The only time we saw people is where we got up Marhill Street. Barbies is a ghost town, that Bridgetown area. And then when we move these buildings, it's going to be worse.
You think so?
I feel so.
You think the buildings give you what, security? Or light?
No, because the people, it would be light, yeah, and people normally be out there hanging about linemen and stuff, you know what I mean? But when you move it, is what's going to happen?
Hopefully they'll find a new place to lime or hang out. I've had discussions with Lalu Vashwani, various other people who have businesses in Bridgetown, former head of the chamber, Eddie Abed, about revitalizing Bridgetown, changing the image of Bridgetown, bringing life back to Bridgetown. They all have plans. They all talk about the plans, the business community, Chamber of Commerce, the various organizations. But somehow the support of the public and the enthusiasm to put what they call life back into the city just doesn't seem to be there.
Because when you look at it, watch it, all National Insurance building gone, Fed Station gone, BNB Bank, I actually assume should be going soon, Scotia Bank gone. On that stretch, there's nothing happening besides the lot of office and the library.
Mm-hmm.
Then we turn left, there's the Manning might be probably going soon. Then it's like blank, it starts there, it's dead.
No, if they turn all those into hotels and places to eat and drink, would it bring life back? If they put, as they've said, redevelop the vendors area so that it's designed to look and feel like Oystins on a Friday night with kiosks and places to eat and drink and sell pork. Do you think that would bring life back to the area?
No.
Why?
Because the hotels can be looking to hold their own business inside. You understand? The guests might not come out. They were like to, and they seem to be going all-inclusive. Barbados going all-inclusive smartly. You understand? That's what Barbados is happening right now. And, no. If the Waterfront Cafe ever closes, it will boom, hello, they're done.
Well, they had closed at one time and reopened. You know, it's interesting the view you have of it, right? So let me ask you this. What do you think would bring life back to the city?
Well, what do I think would bring my life? What do I think? You mean, like, okay.
What type of business? Active. What type of activity?
You can get, you know, nightclub, jazz clubs. You know what I mean? People can be seen. It's a lot of different. There's a lot of different things that can happen.
Do you think the change in working hours will make a difference?
To me, no.
Right.
No. Because when you look at it, I'm looking at, okay, Hyatt Hotel going up. The fire station and what they nearly pushed down. They're going to remodel a park there. What's going to happen to Nelson Street back? Look. The old houses and the old whatever in the back of Nelson Street over there. What's going to happen out there?
Well, if they get jobs, they should be able to fix their homes. If government gives them incentives once you have a job. Remember, okay, take your mind back to solar water heaters. The government of the time had incentives in place for people to switch from using electric heaters to solar water heaters, and solar water heaters are now a fixture in Barbadian homes. If you had the same type of incentive to, if you have a job and you have a house in the vicinity of the city and you say you have a city revitalization, whatever you care to call it, scheme, where if somebody wants to change, for example, the windows on their house, they get X or Y off their taxes or whatever, would it help the people to change their standard of living? Because when I go through the Bayland, for example, I see houses in the Bayland that have been changed over a period of time into wall, upstairs and downstairs. Some of the wooden houses have been refurbished, repainted. So you see people taking side by side with those that are falling apart and have grass growing out the window. But those that are being used, if you drive along some of the streets, for example, you could see a change in the way the street looks. If you go across Culloden Road, you see a change in the way the houses look. But there are others that are falling apart. And it's either because nobody's living in them or they just don't have the money to fix it.
Unfortunately, I don't have the sight to sight what's
to see
going
it,
on
right, yeah. Which is why I was telling you what I see when I go around.
But what I'm looking at right now, my major concern is out there. But
out there by the lights and the having thing.
Even if you, an evening, or one of your comrades could go over there evening anytime after 7, they would actually be able to testify what the feeling
is out
there.
Trust me, right? We work here till almost midnight sometimes. So I see the congestion and sometimes I see the emptiness as well. On weekends, for example.
There's nothing to do with the drivers and the vehicles.
No. I'm talking about the walk-in. Yeah, the area.
Yeah.
On both sides of the waterway. Going along the back of the mall and going along the back of the bus stand, they're both desolate. Yeah.
Right, especially where you went after the light from you and you swing there, there's not much light.
Yeah.
It is horrible.
Yeah.
It needs to be more lighted and, you know me, and the vehicles, the transport workers, I don't know what time they work to, but nobody wasn't really out there to say blah, blah. It's only because of the minibus conductor, he said something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, ma'am. Well, we'll hear what they said about it and thanks for raising it with us. 4341-790. You can also reach us at 266-IVOB, or you can send a WhatsApp, you can send an email to brasstax@starcomnetwork.net. Brasstax, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Denny.
Hi, good morning.
This is John Goddard.
Mr. Goddard, how are you, sir?
You must be saying, not bad, you must be saying that I'm calling too often.
No, why would I say that, sir? I haven't heard you for a long while.
Right.
I read something.
Spoke to you.
I read something from you in the newspaper today, too.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
It is that I first want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, I was born in 1950, so I'm an old man to you.
1950.
So yes, I'm an old man to you now.
Oh, you're an old man to me. I was born in 57. You're only 7 years older than me. You would only hold my hand across
Dennis,
the road.
You sound to me like a 40-somebody year old.
No, sir. No, sir, no, sir. They told me I would make 45, and I up in 62. So, you know, I batted longer than they thought. When you send a tail ender, and you say, you only make 10. Well, I make a little more than 10. Go ahead, sir.
Right. Now, Dennis, I have found, as you know, I've been a teacher for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my concerns is that a lot of the youngsters in school do not understand anything about the work of our and the sacrifices of our national heroes. Mm-hmm. And even the Right Excellence Earl Barrow, who died just in 87, a lot of the youngsters don't know about any of the work that he did. And I told a group of students that the truth is that Grantley Adams and Earl Barrow laid a foundation from which they are benefiting now. And they found difficulty to understand what I was talking about, you see? So I want to say this, and I'm not going to be long. As I said, I was born in 1950, so I went through the period, the last period with Grantley Adams. I know a bit about the Federation because my father, Dennis, used to pick me up as a three-year-old and take me to political meetings. Especially during the vacation, I would hear Florence Daish and Grantley Adams into Crawford. So I have because I had a good memory. I was gypsy at the time, Dennis, and I learned a lot. I soaked, you know, sitting like sponges.
Mm-hmm.
I soaked up a lot, and I remember when Mr. Barrow came back to Barbados, and as he would have to, because it was the only Labour Party around, he joined the Barbados Labour Party. My father, who was Grantley Adams diehard, was delighted because he referred him as this brilliant young man. And Grantley Adams made a mistake of saying that Mr. Barrow would take over for him someday. This is the next leader of Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
But when Mr. Barrow left Baptist Labour Party, my father referred to him as a communist, who would destroy Barbados if he ever get the chance to lead us.
That was
if anybody was so stupid, he said, to give him the chance to lead him.
Mm-hmm.
I try to point out the contradiction of his position, but you know, I was a youngster and I can't
upstart.
Tell him his father.
Upstart.
Right. I was 11 then.
Mm-hmm.
So this a little upstart. You see, you're getting education. That's what you saw.
Well, you see, but sir, let me say this to you, and I wanted to I let you go ahead without stopping at the point I wanted to make the comment to you on, and is this: you talk about the youngsters not knowing the what you mean by, you know, built on the shoulders of Sir Grantley and
Barrow.
The problem that I see with our celebration of our national heroes is that we cherry pick which ones we talk about and which ones we don't.
True.
We seem to try to not shine the light, for example, on some of the others. We talk about Mr. Barrow on the Right Excellent Errol on his day. We talk about some of our national heroes, but we just breeze through the others, you know. Buster, we say we ain't sure we know who this was. This person in it really, was it him in charge? Was it somebody else? We don't mention Sarah Ann Gill. We brush past the others. But when you talk about a foundation, you talk about building a respect for those who went before. We need to have inculcated into our people the stories, the challenges, the achievements, the pitfalls of all of our national heroes. We shouldn't say only sportsmen should tell you about Sir Gary, or only religious people should tell you about Sarah Ann Gill, only the political people should tell you about Mr. Barrow or Sir Grantley. Only the Labour people should tell you. We segment our national heroes into either the party or the area in which they were, as opposed to their contribution to national development. And then we hear the argument about the others who should have been. One thing, for example, I may not like everything about the U.S., but know this about them. They tell you about their presidents, good, bad, and the indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
And they do, you know, and they let you know that this president did that president did the other, and then they may whisper under their breath, oh, he had a black mistress, or he cut down somebody's cherry tree, or whatever it is. But they always talk about what they did. We have not yet reached that stage in our development.
A level of maturity. We haven't
Correct.
Reached a level of maturity.
And the other thing you mentioned that I wanted to point out is that your father took you to political meetings. Because one of the things I remember from my early years, age 5, I couldn't read the newspaper, but if my uncles sat down with the newspaper opened, they would be talking about what was in the newspaper. So when Eric Gehry was removed in 1962, they would mention that. If there was Squandermania, if there was independence, they would mention that. So when Trinidad got their independence in 1962, guess what? I was in Trinidad. I was only 5 years old, but I was there.
Wow.
When Barbados got theirs in 66, I was here. So I was part of the development and the history. And I would pick up the newspaper and make up my own news because I can read, but I hear my uncle and them reading. So, you know, I pick up the newspaper. I was like about 5. So that's why I was making the comment to the lady that if we wait until 12 to figure out that we children ain't learning, something wrong.
Your
father was taking you to meetings at what, 3 and 4?
3 years old.
Great. Right.
And then it's not only that.
You couldn't figure out what people were saying, but you know they were talking and people were laughing and reacting.
And clapping, yes.
Exactly.
And my mother taught me to read, Dennis, from very, very early, long before I went to primary school. So you know what? At age 7, my father used to buy 2 newspapers every day, the Daily News and the Advocate.
There you go.
And you know what I had to do?
Read it to her?
The editorial to him.
Precisely.
Read the editorial. And you know the editorial used got some big words.
I know.
And I had to call these words. And so when I was in
even,
primary school,
even though you don't know what it is.
No, I didn't know what it meant. But I had to read to him.
That's
you know
education.
What I mean? Yes. And so I was saying that a lot of middle class Barbadians now really profited from the hard work of these two gents in Barbados, and also Charles Duncan O'Neill. I find that we forget him. Charles Duncan O'Neill brought a lot of the social ideas to Barbados, which borough, and then later you know. I don't know if you understand that.
Yeah, and that's why I say we need to talk about the contributions of all.
Very much
how
so.
The labor movement was, why they
right.
needed the labor movement, why the labor leaders were so important, some of the personal struggles they had, because a lot of them, just as you talk about Mr. Barrow being called a communist, they were called all sorts of names too. They were threatened. Their
right.
livelihoods sometimes were cut.
That's right. William, at that Dennis, I wonder if government, we're talking about knocking down the national insurance bill, and I am not yet convinced that that's what's happening. I wonder if a museum, you know, we have nowhere to house our natural heroes, statue and pictures and so on, photographs that people can go. I feel that we should have somewhere, a museum, where people could go, not only see the natural heroes, but also see a write-up on each of them.
Sir, I totally agree with you. I have often found it strange that we have statues of some, we have statues purporting to be one, and then we used to put pictures on the side of the Treasury building for others. I think it is important if we have the same square that's being developed. If we're going to have there's countries that have a National Heroes Square, where you have busts of all the national heroes, but we don't pay attention to them things. We knock down the 3 W's and we don't clean some and we don't clean others. I believe there should be a place where the contributions of our exemplars and national heroes should be part of the development of the education of our children into citizenship and understanding the contributions of these people. St. Vincent and the Grenadines, for example, I had the opportunity, the comrade Ralph Gonzalez took me on a tour of his office to show me that along a corridor heading to the conference room in government headquarters, there was not only a photograph, but a bust made from the photograph of all the prime ministers of St. Vincent, the years they were in office, and something about them. Now, if you don't go into government headquarters and nobody takes you there, you may not see it.
You will not know.
Right. But it's there. So if you have schools going on tours or whatever, they could go and follow the names of prime ministers that they don't know, premiers, and the times they were in office. It's a lesson in history. We need to understand that this is part of our development. When I was growing up, sir, and I was in school, in primary school, I knew the names of the prime ministers of the Caribbean.
Very much so.
I knew what the coat of arms of the Caribbean said, and sometimes it was in Latin. I think if we went into a secondary school in Barbados today and asked a class 2 or 3 to name all the prime ministers in the Caribbean, I know they would have trouble.
But Dennis, you
I know they would have trouble.
I can tell you something more than that. I can tell you that.
And you teach. So
when I was a college teacher, I was shocked to discover that a class I went to, the students didn't know the Governor General of Barbados. He was at that time a husband.
Yeah.
Sir Clifford. That's the new book they need to borrow.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't know who the Governor was.
They didn't know Sir Clifford.
No, they didn't know Sir Clifford. I could not believe it.
Sir, let me take it a step further, right? Recently, Dame Sandra was out of the island. And we had an acting Governor General.
Hewitt, yeah.
Yes. And his wife, who should be referred to as Lady Hewitt.
Lady Hewitt, yeah.
Was referred to as Anne Hewitt in the news on 3 occasions.
Oh, Lord.
Which means that the person writing either did not know who she was, did not know that her husband is a knight, and did not know that he was acting Governor General at the time the story was written. So it is not only schools. When you leave school with that lack of knowledge or interest in civics or understanding what's happening, it goes with you.
Right. And Dennis, you're a study journalist and so on to try to acquaint themselves with the information.
Precisely.
There.
But sir, there is also a danger in not being educated properly. I'm using the term educated for
a
reason.
I know what you mean, yes.
Right?
Mm. One
of the things I've noticed, the British press and the press in general, the international media, they have a way of slighting people if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Duke and Duchess, the first brother, is referred to all the time as the Duke and Duchess.
Mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The second brother, the one who has just relinquished his Royal Highness title.
Yeah, Harry. Yeah.
Harry. They refer to him as His Royal Highness and Meghan Markle. They never refer to her as Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex.
But you know
never.
Why?
But they refer to the other one. But here's the problem. I know why, sir. It is racist and it is bigoted and it is nonsensical. Okay? But here's my problem. My problem is when all reporters do the same thing without understanding why it's being done.
Yes.
And that's what I mean by education. Because they should be able to look at a story and go, hold on, why are you saying Kate, the Duchess of whatever, and saying Prince Andrew and Meghan Markle? Why? Something in your mind should trigger that this is wrong, that there's something wrong. Or saying Miss Markle while referring to the other one as Kate, the Duchess of. And those are the subtle things that an education should teach you to do. And that's why I say I have a problem with how we're educated. Because unlike your father who used to take you to see, we ain't seeing it.
Yeah, you know, school. Mm-hmm. When I was at the law school, we used to be boys. We didn't have any television. And some of the boys didn't have any newspapers either. But do you know, we argued about Mandela, Julius Nyerere, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and the ones in the Caribbean, Norman and Michael Manley. You know what I mean? Eric Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. We knew these people. And this, because I find, Dennis, that the 60s were perhaps the most intellectually stimulating period of, and you were part of that too, because you would have been.
Late 60s and into the 70s,
right.
It was a revolutionary period, sir.
Fairly, yes.
I knew all the speeches of Martin Luther King almost by heart.
Of course.
Learned it.
And then the literary giants like Lemon and Kamau Bradford and like Paul.
Yeah.
And you know, and your own, the Guernese, the what is it, the guy who wrote The Story of Love and all that. So all these facts. We just knew about them. Bradford.
Mm-hmm.
And I am concerned, Dennis, that with all of the technology and everybody with a cell phone and can Google, how is it that our young people don't know?
Because
who
it's not
is
written.
The Prime Minister of Grenada?
Because it's not written, sir. That and so you see, and the problem is again, it goes back to where we get our information. If you go online and you go to Wikipedia and you Google Barbados, you see the most, I don't know, amazing thing written about your country.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it as I speak to read it to you because I don't want to misquote it, right? I misquote Wikipedia. But Wikipedia has something about Barbados that when I looked at it, I wondered who wrote this and why was it allowed to remain? Wikipedia says, Barbados is an island country in the Lesser Antilles of the West Indies, in the Caribbean region of North America.
That's you can't be serious.
I am reading straight off of this, sir.
Well,
it says it was established in 1966. I read in Wikipedia.
Okay,
so if I tell a student, go and research Barbados and tell me what Barbados is, and the student writes, Barbados is an island country in the Lesser Antilles of the West Indies in the Caribbean region of North America. And I give him full marks for that. You expect the guy to be educated?
But you got me here now because I didn't look at the
Oh, I did one day and I almost cried. Okay. I have never forgotten it.
I wonder what it would have on Grenada.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know. And you see, and this is the problem I have. When we sit here and say, oh, people think we're from Jamaica. Well, they're massive. That's what they're reading. That says nothing about us. It does not say who we are. And the hurtful thing is, nobody has sought to change it. We know who we are. We have to know who we are, sir. And it is unfortunate as we head into another celebration of the life of the Right Excellent EWB, that we're not making changes to that, sir. But I've enjoyed our conversation, so please keep writing and, you know, Look forward to hearing you from time to time. Certainly was an interesting chat for me. I enjoyed it. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Mr. Johnson.
My Lord, how are you, sir?
Pleasant day to you.
To you too, sir.
I heard you on a subject that is dear to my heart, and you know that I will discuss Bridgetown as long as you're the moderator. Now, I want to put forward a plan, but I want to acknowledge something before I, out of experience, I'm putting forward a plan. And I want to acknowledge the support at the time given by the then Minister Glenn Murray, based on what was done for Bridgetown in relation to bringing Bridgetown and making Bridgetown as active as it should be. Having worked as the advisor in the Prime Minister's office then, a lot of things happened in Bridgetown and should still be happening. Now, I say this as a plan. To revitalize Bridgetown, you have to think in terms of from Passage Road all the way back to St. Paul's Church. Why do you say that? I'm saying that because you have to involve the churches across the spectrum in Barbados and in the city. And then you have to involve the schools within the spectrum across that area. The reason for this is that Bridgetown cannot function on its own unless they're people. Now, every church in Bridgetown, and this is a 52-week plan and put in towards that is possible. Every church between that spectrum would be able to have a program planned within the vicinity as expressed, and every school would acknowledge the importance of being positioned in the Bridgetown area. You and I know that nightclubs are important, but when you look at nightclubs now in Bridgetown, there are not really any nightclubs to cause people. The warehouse type of nightclub don't exist anymore. You don't have a club that you can tell your spouse or somebody to let's go and have a drink and let's have a dance. So you need to look at putting a type of nightclub in Bridgetown that would encourage people not only to come back to Bridgetown, but to be able to feel comfortable as far as Bridgetown is concerned and as far as a family unit is concerned. So this idea of a discotheque, no discotheques. You have what they consider to be a different type of nightclub in Bridgetown, now, which really does not cause people to really want to come back to Bridgetown because of what is being presented there. Now, if you take over the last couple of months, Mr. Johnson, people talk about entertainment this and entertainment that. Entertainment cannot solve the problem as far as Bridgetown is concerned. What will help solve the problem as far as Bridgetown is getting people involved in Bridgetown, getting events that will cause people to become. I remember we did what was known as fashion in Bridgetown, and that was extremely important because we were able to bring people from all across the island to the main street, Broad Street, to see fashion, to see young people who were involved in fashion, not only in fashion and clothing, but also the type of cars that were produced then in the fashion. You're looking now at the idea of using the facilities of Bridgetown in terms of entertainment. But isn't any and every bit of entertainment you want to present? You want to be able to present entertainment that's spread across the spectrum as far as the city is concerned. You just can't say that you're bringing Crossfair or you're bringing this or you're bringing that. You have to look at entertainment that will cause people to want to come out. There's several choirs of all the churches in Bridgetown that can be involved in a sing-off in Bridgetown or involved in something along that line. What I find is that people need to sit down and discuss Bridgetown. People need to understand that when you talk about one-way street is only traffic. That is not bringing people to be involved in the activity. When you talk about at least the stores not functioning, because most of the stores in Bridgetown, as far as people are concerned, are not selling the type of items at the cost that they want to buy. So then you start to look at a whole structure, a whole plan of causing people to be involved in shopping in Bridgetown. So I am feeling that it can be salvaged. I am feeling that with the right people involved, and the right understanding of Bridgetown, and not just Broad Street and Swan Street, but you look at the various. St. Paul's have got activity there. Church of God in Chapman Street have got activity there. You look across the Moravian Church on Robert Street has got activity. You look at all the churches. You look at all the schools. You look at every area that can make a contribution to a plan. And this plan cannot take place in not 2 weeks. The plan has to be a spread over plan where each school or each church will think in terms of putting on a program, not in the heart of Bridgetown, but at the various churches across. There's a possibility to remove. You remove with an event to Independence Square. You remove with an event to Jubilee Gardens, but then you're looking at a cost structure. You're looking at not just producing something. You're looking at who will subsidize this cost. I'm of the opinion that there's seven business places in Barbados having work with them who will be willing to give in, provided it's the type of program that they will benefit by. Besides that, the literature of Bridgetown needs to be publicized, needs to be put out there. People walk Bridgetown daily and are not, they're not sure of what they're seeing. And I think that we need now to start looking at the history of Bridgetown, the way that it should be presented. And that is to say that you've got people like Morris Critish who did the history of Bridgetown that you can follow. But we need to move on that. We need to develop that. We need to get that to the point where somewhere along the line that the average school child understands exactly, this is my town. This is Barbados. This is the country that I love. This is what is happening. I want to be part of it.
I was waiting on you till you get to that point, right? Because that is the point I was trying to get across from the get-go. And that is, what is the significance of the city of Bridgetown to the average Barbadian today? When you go back to the years, perhaps when you were younger and I was younger, the face of Bridgetown represented the face of what we call the mercantile class. Whether we liked them or we didn't like them, that's who it represented. It represented the places where our aunts and our uncles and our mothers and our sisters would look for a little pick when they left school. They had shop windows, and the shop windows used to have things in it to entice us to buy. So at Christmas time, you would window shop. Window shop meant that your mother, your father, or whoever represented your mother and father and the whole string bang of little ones would go walking. Whether or not you could buy was not the important thing. The important thing is what you saw it. So there was pedestrian traffic. There was a sense of, this is part of our lives. This is what we do. Today, most people just drive through Bridgetown and complain about a place that they have no place to park, when what they mean is they have no place to park where they don't have to pay, right? No, there are very few storefronts or store windows. People now print color brochures and send it in the newspaper or send it to you on WhatsApp or email, and the store window is not the place where you're enticed to shop. People take the jewelry out of the window because somebody will break the window and carry it away, and some of these storefronts just for sale and closed up. If, or shuttered down as though a storm is coming. If that is the look and feel of your city, outside of the places where people gamble and drink, Mahill Street still got people roaming around there at the pools, etc.
That's right.
Right. So there is a certain type of life. The question is, what type of life is there and what is going to entice people to come back? I saw three Caucasians, let me call them that, who came off of a yacht walking from the bottom of Broad Street to the top of Broad Street, asking every taxi driver, person passing, where's the supermarket, the big supermarket, the big supermarket, the big market? They weren't even speaking. Somebody took them all across to Jordan's and they told them, not that one, the big supermarket. Which supermarket do you think they were looking for, sir?
You tell me.
I don't know. But here's the problem. Somewhere along the line, as you usually use that term, yachts people coming into Bridgetown on a Sunday or a Saturday expect them to find a big supermarket. What's the big supermarket we have in Bridgetown?
The last one don't exist anymore.
Exactly. Good. Okay.
That was Goddard's, I suppose.
Or Julianne, if you want to go back that far.
Yeah.
Okay. But so people expect to find certain things in the city. Over the weekend, we had some cruise ships in here on Sunday, I think. Sunday is the day I work, so I'm usually here on River Road from about 10 to about 4 in the afternoon. And all over the city, all going up Bay Street, there were people just walking around. There was nothing open in town. Now, in former times, and you could recall these former times, Harry's, various pubs on Bay Street would be open, and people may be able to buy a beer or eat a Bajan delicacy or two, cooked or uncooked. But, you know, I had to throw that rock. But what is there now? There may be a couple, but the rest of the place is closed and shuttered. Now, if you're talking about revitalizing a city, you have to talk, first of all, about changing or times of work. You have to. Because to get these businesses up and running, they have to operate outside of the 8 to 4 that people are going to be in the various government offices working. Who is going to leave Warren's from Tower 1, Tower 2, 3, or 4, or whichever one, CGI Tower or Simpson Motors, to go into Bridgetown, to park, to walk around, to do something, if tongue is shut at 4:30 and they leave work at 4:30?
That's right.
Just to get down to University Hill, going to take them to 6 o'clock anyhow.
That's right.
Or 5:30. So we have to look at when we open, how we open. Now, I hear people talking about, oh, we like the malls. And okay, yeah, all right. But why do we like the malls? Because they're conditioned? Because they're closed up? Because, you know, why? So if we pedestrianize Bridgetown and turn it into Bridgetown Mall, will it make a difference? I don't know. So I hear the nightlife part, but we have to make it safe in the night. We have to have something that would make us want to stay in town, as they say. And
not even to see,
just to enjoy it. Yeah. What is there to enjoy? I heard you making a comment when I was producer about going up the, or it was somebody making about going up the river.
Yes. Right? Yes. Using the river for
tours.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know what I said to myself, sitting down in the producer's booth, what will you see when you go up the river? What does Bridgetown look like from the river? Has anybody gone up the river to see what it looks like? If you're going past the Chamberlain Bridge, right?
Yep.
And you go under the Charles Duncan O'Neill Bridge, you really want to see the mess that's the minibus stand with those shacks out there and the old Queen's College building close up, the hospital on the other side. What it is you'll see going up the river. So when we talk about going up the river, and if you have yachts on both sides and the space narrow, what are you going to see? So you have to talk about making the landscape look interesting for somebody going up the river, unless they're racing one another in a boat.
So when we
talk about changing the look of the city, we have to look at all these things. What does our buildings look like? How do we preserve the green areas? How do we, you know, what do we do to make our city look attractive? And I don't know if all the talk we had about architects and draftsmen and artisans, that they understand how you go about making the city look decent. If you look at the beach, if the beach is nothing but umbrellas and chairs, would you find it pretty? I don't find it pretty, but that's what I see these days when I go to the beach, umbrellas and chairs.
Let me expand a little bit, Mr. Johnson, on when I talked about the river. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, quite recently, some young men were using that area with remote boats.
I've seen that. Using aircraft and all kind of things too. Yeah. Radio controlled craft. Yep. And it's quite interesting.
I'm of the opinion
they have picnics too.
No bigger boats should enter that channel between the Queen's Park and let's probably say, but when I look at the buildings,
wedging between down to the pierhead, chances are that it's a view that you cannot get by walking it. The whole impression is that you're not looking for those big power boats. You're looking for what they probably think would be a little love boat, probably owned by one person or a little power engine, that the person will be able to have not a short conversation as they make that cruise down to the pierhead. Besides that, what I've discovered as far as Bridgetown is concerned, that the people who live in the surrounding areas of Bridgetown, when they leave Bridgetown, there's nothing that could encourage them to come back out to enjoy Bridgetown. So that's why I'm saying that we need to spread our wings outside of the center of Bridgetown and involve the persons who are within the surrounding areas of Bridgetown.
Sir, I can't disagree with you. I told a young lady who told me she was getting fat and she has two young children to take them and run down the garrison, because she lives fairly close to the garrison. And she tell me, I'm not even going there in the day, far less in the night. I say, I'm not telling you to go there in the night. I tell you to take your children and let them run around the garrison if you think you're getting fat. But unfortunately, sir, I will tell you that all recreation is now indoors on television and social media. I used to live in Christchurch, and on Saturdays we would cook, put the children in the car, and drive down to the garrison, sat down, watch the horses run, let the children run about in the grass, eat lunch in the car. And to me, it was the happiest days of my life, because I grew up looking at horses exercising in the morning. I really don't care to bet on them. I just like to see them. And the area had a peaceful memory for me. And I would take my children there. I would go on the beach and sit down with them, and they'd play in the sand. And I'd be quite happy. We talk about cinemas and theaters, and you just had a play, film, produced by a Barbadian, another one, Joseph, went to Africa and premiere showing, and could we have a live show in Bridgetown with our writers putting on live shows? And we still have that amphitheater off by the post office, or are we done with that? Or the Globe? So when you're talking about bringing a certain type of life back into Bridgetown, would that bring life into Bridgetown if we had theater where people who don't want to go to Olympus could, you know, see a live version? Laugh It Off coming up soon. I think I saw ads for them. I saw Theodore in here recently. Is there an opportunity to have that 1688 orchestra? I see we have a big gathering in St. Lucie with just about everybody and their brother on the cards. More opportunities for young artists at Barbados Community College to play for the public, so that we know we have young saxophonists and young trumpeters, and as opposed to recording filth and putting it on YouTube and sending it around in WhatsApp messages. That's what we want to promote as Bajan culture. I know. The opportunities are there. The question is, what's the appetite of the public for it? Because I know there's an appetite for recording filth and putting it on YouTube and WhatsApp, because people are sending that around. Nobody has sent me a recording of Nicholas Branca Happiness yet, or how many more. But a lot of people circulating other things. What is the right excellent EWB said? What mirror image do you have of yourself? And then we talk about celebrating his centennial tomorrow. We're doing good.